Mike McHarg is just a really special and fun guy. I've been listening to Mike and his partner Michael Gunger with the Liturgist pretty much since the podcast began. And I've been drawn to their conversation for many reasons, but one of them has been Mike's story. Mike has been many things in his life, but he's been a deeply committed Southern Baptist. He's been a deeply committed atheist. He's been a young guy who loved science and kind of got bullied for it. And I just feel like all that's present in his work today as someone who still holds his kind of culture and ideas an atheist in many ways and holds being a person of faith in Jesus as well, and has really interesting things to say out of his experience and out of his thinking. He spent a day earlier this week with Adam and Mary Reynolds and their college ministry over at MIT, which I think was pretty fun for all of them. And he offered to spend the morning with us speaking at the end of his conference. So anyway, I'm looking forward to what Mike has to say, and I'd love for you to give him a warm welcome to Mike McHarg / Science Mike. Come on up, Mike.
He's got your number, folks. He has got your number. I came in this morning. You might hear my voice a little talking this weekend. So we're going to do the best we've got with the remaining resources in my vocal cords. But 9:20? And Steve says, well, it looks like we're going to have nobody at 9:30, but a pretty good crowd by 9:45. I don't know how he knew that from the sample size of people in the room. But it was super impressive. I learned so much about a community, because I do a couple hundred events a year, by when people come into the room. So like I've learned in Cambridge, it's just like start time plus 15. That's just the rule. In Manhattan, the room is empty until 6 to 8 minutes before the event, at which point it fills in 3 minutes. Because everyone knows exactly how many subway stops they are from the venue, and they can time it to the minute. In Los Angeles, where I currently live, you can sell out a ticketed event, and about an hour into it, it will be 50% full, because if people see a taco truck, it's over. So there's just like such fascinating things about culture and when people arrive, but we're not just going to talk about start times this morning. First, like a disclaimer, this is an educated community, and expectations happen when someone walks on a platform. There's two contexts. You probably mainly see people walk on a platform in Cambridge. One is they are a professor, and they have a doctorate in something, and they're an expert, right? That's an expectation. And because people call me Science Mike, you probably wonder, like, I wonder what his PhD in the sciences is. And I did go to community college for 6 amazing weeks, but I did not actually graduate. I did graduate high school, and I can show you my high school diploma if you need it. So I'm not an academic expert. He talks at churches all the time, so he's probably ordained. And I was ordained as a deacon in the Southern Baptist Church. But when I became a Methodist, they stripped me of the ordination. So I don't have a degree or an ordination. And why do I tell you this other than to lower your expectations to make my job easier? I live at an interesting intersection. Former religious fundamentalist, former atheist, current weirdo mystic, right? And that means in the act of being me, I tend to, in one talk, really affirm every single person in the room at some point and deeply offend them. So I want to give you a tool set for the experience you're about to have. When I say the thing that like makes you feel great, you go, oh, that was wonderful, and you take it with you out of this room. If I say a thing that drives you crazy or offends you, just go, that guy's a college dropout hack who doesn't know what he's talking about. And then your lunch after church is going to be perfect, right? You don't have to like fume over anything that happened. We're going to talk this morning a little bit about prayer, because prayer is my favorite. and in a series about what we talk about when we talk about God. I don't think you can talk about God, know God, experience God without prayer. And prayer is kind of wild. We're a deeply prayerful nation. I think it's a stretch to say we were founded as a Christian nation. I would say we are certainly currently a culturally Christian nation, although a little bit less so every year. But if you look at American attitudes on prayer, they don't mirror American attitudes toward the church. So while Americans, especially millennials and post-millennials, are rapidly leaving organized churches, they are not leaving prayer. 76% of people polled in 2015 believed in the power of prayer, and 62% of them prayed regularly. 74% pray about, of the 62%, pray about personal challenges, and 56% of people believe most of their prayers are answered. That was shockingly high to me, 56%. 37% said some of their prayers are answered. So like, people tend to think prayer works. 14% said, I don't know if prayer works at all, and those are my people. I get that. Because have you ever felt like God was distant? Have you ever felt like, I don't know if God is listening or not? Have you ever thought, if God listens, that presents some interesting logical problems and contradictions? Years ago, I ran across a silver-covered book called The God Delusion, written by a gentleman named Richard Dawkins, who's a phenomenal evolutionary biologist. But this particular book was not about evolutionary biology. It was about why believing in God is really, really silly and stupid. And when I first started reading The God Delusion, I thought it was a bunch of warmed over, boring arguments from atheists that I'd heard before, at least in the introduction. And then it got better. By better, I mean horrible. Because it started challenging things I believed about God. So when Richard Dawkins talks about prayer, he challenges you to pray to a milk jug. I just think that's weird. A milk jug is the object he picked. Like, what if people are lactose intolerant? They don't have milk in their house. They can't complete the experiment. Anyway, so he says, you know, put some milk in your fridge, and until it expires, pray to it and see what happens and see if it answers prayer. Because what do we say about God answering prayer in the church generally? God has three answers, right? Yes, no, wait. Three possible answers to prayer, which is really reasonable. So you pray and you observe which of the answers you get, and you know God's answer. The problem with yes, no, and wait is that's literally everything that could happen at a given event. Something will happen or won't or will happen later. So I actually tried in good faith the milk jug experiment. I asked the 2% in my fridge for a promotion at work for 2 weeks, and I got it. So I was left with this like interesting moment, like, do I convert to milkism, or does Richard Dawkins have a point? And we have this interesting thing happening right now where our modern sensibilities challenge our spirituality. Our understanding of a scientific world in which proton's gonna proton and electron's gonna electron makes the mystical ideas of a supernatural entity moving in the world seem anything from superstitious to outright silly. Intercessory prayer, the idea that we speak and God listens, has problems. How do we know God is listening? And which prayers does God answer? My mom prayed once that God would be revealed to me in my life, and a few weeks later, I found myself in the presence of one of time's most 100 influential people who who specializes in spirituality to talk to me about God. And that was pretty amazing. But it was around the time there was some pretty brutal genocide happening in the Middle East. And I thought, how many of those mothers are Christians asking that their children survive? And God says yes to my mom, but no to that mother? Is that just? What kind of a God is that? That's gross. And I think Jesus gets that. One of my favorite passages in the gospel is this person who we as a church believe was incarnate of God, the Spirit of Christ, wanders around the desert trying to figure out what's the plan for my life and what does my father have to do with it. And I love that, like, the most central figure in the Christian tradition has an existential crisis related to prayer. That's instructive. Because we've kind of been sold a bill of goods as a culture about prayer that has to do with faith and certainty and absolute trust. And I don't know, that's not how Jesus rolled. So I went through a period of life where I didn't pray at all, and I missed it a lot. And then I had an experience where I encountered God, and I wanted to pray again. And I felt silly praying because of the aforementioned milk jug, right? Now I just have an imaginary milk jug in the sky instead of my fridge. And if that resonates with you at all, that degree of skepticism, like the idea of praying makes you feel like a 59-year-old man standing in line at the mall to see Santa Claus. It's just fundamentally wrong and uncomfortable on some level. Something that really encouraged me was studying neuroscience. So there's some neuroscientists who study prayer, and they study more specifically what prayer does to the human brain. And what we have found is that the practice of prayer is profoundly beneficial for the human brain. So let's forget for a second, let's set aside the milk jug quandary, and let's instead investigate, does prayer have empirical value? And I think that it does. Because when they study people who pray regularly, what do they find? They find these people experience a growth in richness in brain tissue in both their prefrontal cortex and their anterior cingulate cortex. The prefrontal cortex is the little tissue, and I know it's early for neuroanatomy terms, okay? Just stay with me. The prefrontal cortex is about as thick as a dinner napkin, and part of it sits right here behind your forehead, right? It's where we think the seat of your consciousness is. Not your conscience, but your consciousness, your awareness that you're a thing and you exist. It's where your agency and willpower and focus reside. So an increase in health in that region of the brain correlates with better focus and concentration, which no one needs in the age of the smartphone. But the other part of the brain we see richness and improvement in is the anterior cingulate cortex, which in our brains is the seat of compassion and empathy. So frequent prayer makes you more compassionate and empathetic, makes you a little less fearful of people you don't know or would consider an outsider, and it actually makes it more difficult for your brain's amygdala to respond to stimulus. It's harder for you to become fearful or angry if you pray regularly. So these are like radical, lowers your blood pressure. Oh, yeah, also, if you pray a God you believe is listening, you get a similar therapeutic benefit to seeing a therapist, only it's not $100 an hour. So it's like, pragmatically, prayer is incredibly useful, even if logically it seems to be kind of nonsensical. I'll close that loop, don't worry. So if you're a person who thinks like, I want to feel closer to God, but God feels very far away, interestingly enough, they did one experiment where they asked atheists, self-professed atheists, to pray to a God they did not believe in every day for 20 minutes. And at the end of the six-week period, universally, all the atheists reported feeling closer to God, but they still identified as atheists. That's ridiculous. I don't believe in God, but I feel like God is close. What is going on in a brain like that? Well, I think we have a tendency as a species to overplay how rational we are. Something terrible has happened in society. And that terrible thing is the Enlightenment. I know that's heresy in Cambridge. But here's why I say that. Our brains evolved to help us navigate the world and to survive. And you've probably heard that the left brain is analytical and the right brain is artistic, right? You've heard that before? That's not true at all. So just don't repeat that anymore. We gotta kill that myth. What is true is that the left brain tends to be kind of reductionist and the right brain tends to be holistic. And once we entered the Enlightenment, we elevated a particular brain state, a particular type of thinking, which is analyzing reality with the left hemisphere, especially the left prefrontal cortex. At the expense of what? The right prefrontal cortex. The right prefrontal cortex, being holistic, sees a whole and not parts. Why is that important? It informs your intuition. And your intuition is pretty bad at physics. Your intuition's pretty bad at bio and chem and economics and all that stuff. So I don't think, like, I'm not advocating abandoning the Enlightenment and asking students to come to university and just go with their gut on quantum dynamics. I don't want a cardiovascular surgeon to just say, I feel like the problem is in the left ventricle, so let's just cut that thing open. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is, reductionist thinking in the left brain is a tool the brain was given. And the Enlightenment turned it into the only valid way to experience the world. Well, oddly enough, spirituality, and in our context here, in a Jesus assumption space, is that indeed experiencing the Spirit of God is almost exclusively a holistic experience. So in the way that we approach the world for generations, we've been training our brains to feel like God is far away. So if you look at these atheists who have been praying every day that suddenly feel like God is closer and they still don't believe, their reductionist mimetic framework, their language, their presuppositions was not altered by the experience. What was altered was the balance of activity between their left and right brain. And this is profound, to the point that there's a small number of people that we've encountered in medical science who are what we call split brain patients. And they've had their corpus callosum severed in an attempt to treat epilepsy. Corpus callosum is a thick channel of nerves that connects the two hemispheres of the brain. And really weird stuff happens when you cut the corpus callosum. Like, people can experience one of their arms doing things they don't tell it to do, because one hemisphere of the brain is kind of going rogue. And experiments have allowed us to interrogate the two hemispheres of the brain independently. And there's documented cases of people whose left brain didn't believe in God, but people whose right brain did. Like in the same skull, two different ideas about God. So prayer feeds the holistic brain and tells it that, listen, it's okay. So if you're a person who thinks God is distant, or not, you just want to feel closer to God, or you just want lower stress, teach us neuroscience to pray. Here's how it works. There's a recipe for successful prayer. When you're talking to God, you should share your hopes, your dreams, and your fears. If you talk to God, share your hopes, your dreams, and your fears. If you don't know what to say when you talk to God, a more basic meditation would be to light a candle and look at it and imagine the candle is God's compassion. That's it. That's the whole thing. 15 minutes of looking at a candle. You can do that. Now, you might feel silly. You might, as you sit in stillness, think about your bills or whatever. That's okay. Whenever that happens, just look back at the candle and think of it as God's compassion. If even that's too difficult, there's another type of prayer called the Lectio Divina, where you just read the Bible in a short passage three times and ask yourself different questions. All of these have that tendency to rebalance the brain. No matter what you do, the recipe for success is four things. One, you don't judge the experience. High-achieving Westerners always can't meditate because they go, I tried it and I failed. Nothing happened. That's the point of meditation. Nothing's supposed to happen. Let go of the expectation of things happening is the entire point of meditation and prayer. You want to relax. So like the best strategy of meditation is not to sit in stillness and fret about what you could be doing. You want to be aware. You really want to sit in a moment to have prayer or meditation be successful neurologically. And you want to practice intent. You want to know why you're praying. If you could say I'm praying or meditating because I want to concentrate better, that's fine. You could say I'm meditating because I want to have empathy of people across the social and racial spectrum. That's fine. Like whatever intention you implant, studies have shown will over time modify your behavior. Now back to that milk jug. Did I ever figure that out, the logical contradiction of a God who prays? No, I didn't. If I did, I would have a best-selling book on that topic. But I did figure something out about intercessory prayer in an unfortunate experience. Oddly enough, I was writing a chapter on prayer for my first book. And I'm a writer now. And when you're a writer, you get to do really self-indulgent things. Like, I really like it. Like saying, from this hour every day are my writing hours and I don't take calls. That's amazing. I'm telling you, just try it. Just, if you're not a writer, just whatever you do, say these are my pastoring hours, these are my engineering hours, whatever, and I don't take calls from 8 to noon. And it really doesn't work, but it's nice to tell yourself that people honor it. So, in this particular day, I was sitting at my desk, being brilliant with words, as I always do. And I hear the phone ring outside, like in the living room. And I was like, the audacity of someone to call the house phone during these hours, because my cell phone was off. And then my wife answered the phone, and I heard her say, yes, he's writing now. And I was like, good job, thank you. And then she said, hold on, I'll take the phone right to him. And I was like, are you kidding me? She brings the phone, and I just look at her with dagger eyes, and she just hands me the phone anyway. So I go, hello? And it was like a guy I hadn't talked to in 5 years. I said, Mike, how you doing? I said, good, I'm just writing. He said, are you sitting down? I was like, yeah, I'm writing. He said, well, I'm with your dad. He was talking at a conference down here in Orlando, and he's had a major stroke, and we're not sure he's going to make it. So you need to come right now. So I get in the car, and I drive. I was living in Tallahassee at the time, so I drove 4 hours down the most boring state of Florida drive you can do. Florida's real flat, and the trees don't change. It's just flat, straight roads that go like 12 hours. But so I drive 4 hours to Orlando, and I go into the hospital room, and like, here's my dad, and half of his face is etched in the worst pain I've ever seen on his face, and the other half is just completely slack. And I took his hand, and I was so afraid, and I was so hurt for how much he was hurting. And I stayed there a long time. But eventually, there were some medical procedures that needed to happen, and they said we should go rest, so I went to my hotel room. When I got to the hotel room, I got down on the carpet, I put my knees on the ground and my nose on the ground, and I started to pray. And I didn't say, I practiced awareness and intent in silence. I begged God to save my father. But the difference was, I was no longer thinking of God as a cosmic vending machine that if I put in the right pocket change of righteousness and obedience and press the right button, then God will dispense a blessing. In this case, I wasn't asking a milk jug, yes, no, wait, which one is it? I was admitting before God, I have not been able to stop believing in my powerlessness and my helplessness and my hope that the animating feature underneath our universe really is love and grace and redemption. I think sometimes for prayer like God, we make a mistake turning it into a trillion-piece jigsaw puzzle that we're just going to figure out with our Western modern rationalism, and perhaps the right posture for not only meditation but intercessory prayer is to dwell within the mystery of being a species that can wonder why we are here and why others suffer. Would you pray with me? Great and mysterious God, could you help us open our hearts right now? Could you help us to reach toward you? God, for those today for whom you feel distant or impossible, could they soon feel you reach back? Could we, through prayer, admit our helplessness, but our hopefulness, our powerlessness, but our ability to love and serve our neighbor? Help us, God, to use our right brains to see the whole person in front of us, to not see a conservative or a liberal, a citizen or an undocumented person, not a series of labels, but a divine reflection of your image, fearfully and wonderfully made. Could our hearts be transformed by prayer? Amen.